Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is a great one. We are interviewing someone who's a modern day beauty scientist, Sophie Bai. Sophie has had a passion for science since a very young age, since the age of 16. She had a minor planet named after her by NASA and Lincoln Labs. She's been a chemical engineer with a focus on biomedical engineering at MIT, and she's invented multiple different proprietary molecules to help to treat eczema, atopic dermatitis, and skin cancers. So she has patented some proprietary stuff, and she is an entrepreneur. We're going to learn about her skincare, her philanthropy ventures, and also her current company, BAI Biosciences. And I think you guys are going to be so delighted. And I also want to learn all about her skincare tips and tricks and why your skin doesn't need to age anymore. Welcome, Sophie, to the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. K. So great to be here.
So tell us why you got into skin science. You started with planets and chemical engineering, biomedical engineering. What brought you to the skin?
I was a mathlete growing up. So if you think about athletes training their whole life to compete in Olympics, I train here in my head. I'm a terrible athlete, like I'm terrible in any sports. But I started to be on the STEM path since I was 6, 7 years old. I just found science very fascinating. And I believe science and technology is the only way to move humanity forward in a good way. And that's why, I was doing aging research and cancer research at such a young age that led to NASA named the planet after me and came to MIT to do more cancer research with Dr. Bob Langer. But skin has always been very personal to me. Growing up, I had terrible cystic acne and eczema. So when I was competing in a public speaking contest when I was 11 years old, the judges in front of the audience of 1,000 people said that I looked ugly and
Oh
they
my
didn't
God.
want to listen to what I had to say. So I got kicked out of that competition. And it was my first time as a kid, I guess feeling very helpless at that time, because before that, I was very bubbly, extroverted, thinking that as long as I work hard, I can get something out of it. And that proven not to be true in that moment. I was simply denied an opportunity just because of how I looked or how I could have fixed my appearance overnight. And looking back, there are a lot of things in life shouldn't be beauty contests, turn out to be beauty contests. So that is one of my biggest insecurity is my skin. And when I was, doing cancer research at Langer Lab, we've seen so many amazing advancements have done for oncology, immunology, cardiovascular, but derm has been very underlooked. And if I'm, gonna make a statement, I do believe based on what I've seen, many of the cancers will be cured in our lifetime, just based on how much science has advanced. But looking at derm, we still use retinol, that was discovered in 1906. And I believe skin, everybody's a patient of skin concerns. And I wanted to make skin more healthcare, like more medical-like. So that's how, I wanted to bring a lot of the rigorous R&D from the cancer world to dermatology and skincare.
I love that mission, and I'm so sorry someone said that to you at age 11. That's crazy, and good thing society has evolved a little bit. But let's talk molecules. So you often talk about molecular beauty. Can you unpack what does that mean, and how does that show up in your formulations of your skincare?
Yeah, definitely. So if you look at a lot of the skincare out there, they use the same tried and true ingredients, right? So you have your retinoids, you have your vitamin C's, you have your acids, AHAs, BHAs. Oftentimes, it's just a mix and match of those ingredients, like building Legos. And what we're doing here is we actually start, using first principle to see what are the concerns. And what are causes of skin concerns? And can we design new molecules just to fix those things? So that's I guess what we do differently is we don't start from existing raw material or ingredients out there. We start from even further upstream to design those molecules that can target those skin conditions like acne, rosacea, melasma, and aging symptoms. So, Pavise is our first step, bringing our science from lab to market that utilize our diamond core molecule, which we engineered specifically for skin conditions.
Well, so the trifecta of great skincare all along, like for the last 25 years, has been retin-A, vitamin C, and a good like skin barrier repair, I would say, and sunscreen, of course. Those would be like my core four things. What are we going to see in this next decade of skin innovation? Any epigenetic skincare or skincare that can stop DNA damage?
Yeah, that's such a great point. What we're seeing in our lab here at MIT is we have done the past couple years a lot of the skin biopsies assays to see how the biomarkers of aging express very differently on healthy skin versus patient with skin cancer versus a 70-year-old skin and a 19-year-old skin. So we do see that the gene expressions differ by quite a lot based on age, a tumor or not. So we are able to, for the next wave of what's going to happen, to actually modulating some of those gene expressions and the protein expressions that lead to the aging symptoms we don't want. So I believe the next wave of what's going to happen from a scientific point of view is some of those stopping the downstream regulations of gene expressions that lead to the aging symptoms. So you will see things like repair much faster or regenerate youthful skin, which means that you can actually turn back the bio clock to see skin that behave much younger than your actual age.
What are some skincare myths that you think too many consumers and people out there believe, and red flags, myths that you want us to, people to stop believing?
I think I would, I guess from what I see, I'm not on social media a lot, but I think the things that I hear the most about is some people are saying sunscreen cause cancer, which is not true, right? We know for a very long time, excessive sun exposure does cause cancer. We have also done our own research to show, on skin biopsies that really drastically induce skin aging and which lead to cancer. So sun protection is very important, either from physical means like wearing protective clothing, sunglasses, seeking shades, or putting sunscreen on. So there hasn't really been evidence showing that in reality chemical sunscreens cause cancer. So I would say that is probably one of the biggest misinformation that I have seen on the internet.
I think that's a big one. I think the whole concept of like products need to be natural or organic or plant-based, like those are the only good products out there. And like, yeah, plants have chemicals and molecules in them that could be damaging, irritating, or caustic. Like, poison ivy is a plant. Not everything plant-based is good for your skin. So I think that's another huge one. But I do like the new focus on looking at cleaner tech for skin. Do you think that there are too many preservatives and chemicals and colorants in our skincare and makeup right now?
I would say skincare and makeup are different. If you look at makeup, they're mainly pigment-based formulations, right? And pigment tend to be much larger particle size, right? So I think that goes back to skin absorption profile. Our skin, is not like a sponge, right? Like not everything gets in. So if it does, every time we shower, we'll become a balloon, but we don't. So it really, I guess, matters in terms of the molecules, surface property, molecular weight, a diameter of the particle, hydrophobicity, all of those things, or even their negative charge or not, that contribute to are they going to get absorbed into skin or not. So most of the time, the pigment themselves are too large because anything we're able to see by our naked eyes, that's an extremely large particle in a microscopic world. So for them to be actually absorbed into skin are, the chance is close to zero. So, we wouldn't worry about, let's say, systematic absorption risk for those large pigment. But irritation could happen for people who have very sensitive skin or eczema psoriasis skin. So I would say the safety on that front is more on the irritation or allergic side rather than, thinking about a systematic absorption side of things. And in terms of skincare, preservative has always been, a hot topic in terms of, paraben safety, things like that. I think if you look at what's happening in the industry, a lot of the suppliers are coming out with quote unquote safer or less irritating profiles of like newer wave of preservatives. But some of those raise risk of do they actually preserve the product, right? Because one thing we really care about for a shelf stable product is that they have to live up to the stability of the shelf life they claim, not have bacterial or microbial contamination or growth in the jar or in the tube. So preservatives is a very important function, and we do see some of the quote unquote cleaner brands or cleaner formulations that have molds grow in them. That's actually much less safe compared to I guess having paraben in formula. So it's an ongoing debate. But again, I think the biggest thing is every scientific debate has a lot of nuance. And instead of fear mongering, I think what's more important is to educate people to understand what is a quote unquote risk and what risk means to them, and what is the dose and duration of that risk, and are they able to, I guess, tolerate or accept that quote unquote risk for the greater benefits that they can receive from the products.
I think that's so important. We've seen a lot of influencer skincare launch and fail and be totally discredited because of very poor quality of ingredients or not shelf stable, developing mold and turning, into degrading product. Like all of that can happen. Like I think people really get on these buzzwords like paraben free and they obsess about it. But you're right, it's far worse to be putting live mold, live bacteria and fungus right on your skin and face and a product that's not shelf stable and it's not the ingredients that were packaged are deteriorating instantaneously. So I think I'm glad that you said that. Look at the dose, the duration, and like really assess what is the true risk. What do you think are the most trending ingredients this year that you've seen launch, or what's something that's going to be coming in the future ingredient wise? That's new and exciting.
I would say, I guess from a buzzword perspective, I definitely have heard a lot about exosomes. That's definitely been buzzy and trendy. And I guess from what's to come, I do say more of those biosignaling ingredients are going to come to the market. Talking about peptides, talking about quasi biologics. Those things do have some sort of bioactivity that could communicate with cells, especially in the aesthetics world, where surgeries or lasers are performed that allows for at least a more real interaction of the epidermis or dermis to interact with those ingredients. I believe those are the next wave coming, right? I wouldn't say to replace the importance of sunscreens or retinoids, but also give people the option to, experience the boost or the reversal of those aging symptoms that people are looking for.
I think so too. I think peptides are incredibly amazing. This year we've seen the launch of semaglutides, the whole Ozempic family of drugs, which are peptides. We know that peptides are extremely powerful. So these like communication messages that can tell the cell to grow more collagen and grow more elastin. I think that'll be amazing. Elastin, I think, is like a frontier that we haven't really conquered. We have a lot of products that improve collagen production, but not that many skin topicals that improve elastin. What do you think of that? How are we
Yeah,
going to
that's
do
a great question.
because we
Yeah, I think.
stretch and pliability of the skin and the recoil and bounciness, and like we get flaccid and lax without elastin.
Exactly. I think people have been overly focused on collagen, but overlook the importance of elastin, which is so important in terms of giving you the dermal structure of healthy collagen alignment that you want, right? You don't want fibrotic, you don't want scar tissues of a misaligned collagen on your face or in your body in general. I think one main difficulty is for the compounds to travel across so many skin layers to get to where elastin resides in your skin structure. That has been a major challenge in terms of topical products that could improve the elastin formation or elastin production in your skin, right? We've seen some of those in the aesthetics world where injectables could boost some of this elastin production, but so far the data has been very limited to be able to see or show that topical application could do that. But that doesn't mean that's not going to happen in the future. But I think that's one of the reasons you have seen, like very few topical products out there can do a good job in terms of, helping stimulating elastin.
Yeah, true. The concept of things being able to penetrate the skin is a really important one. What are your thoughts on that? Because we, like you said, we're seeing topical exosomes and molecules that have very big particle size. What is the best strategy to get these products to penetrate through the stratum corneum, the top layer of the skin?
Yeah, so when I first started at MIT, my specialty was on drug delivery. So basically, getting drug from point A to point B, not in a FedEx DHL way, but actually across different membranes of cells, or trying to bypass a lot of obstacles happening in your body to get to where it needs to go. And transdermal drug delivery is one of the sub-discipline of what I was working on at that time. I think skin is such a wonderful barrier, right? Like its main purpose is actually to prevent almost everything from getting in that can protect all of the other organs in your body, right? So the main function is to don't let everything get in. But there are exceptions, right? So we have learned over the time why retinoids work is because they are so small in molecular size and weight, right? So they're under 500 Dalton. They are smaller than 70 nanometer in diameter, and they're hydrophobic, right? So if you have a thing that's more lipophilic and actually fits in the criteria of size, diameter, and if they're negatively charged, that's even better. They have a much greater chance of getting into your skin and going into your dermis. And that's why, retinoids are the tried and true ones are able to do that. For example, what doesn't, right? Like hyaluronic acid does not, topically does not penetrate the skin at all, right? Regardless of molecular size, just because they're extremely hydrophilic, that our stratum corneum does not let it in. But again, for skincare to work, sometimes it needs to work on the surface. It doesn't need to go inside the deeper layer of the skin. For example, the AHA, BHAs, it works by resurface or exfoliating or breaking down the dead bonds of the dead skin cells on the surface, right? So by default, it doesn't need to get into dermis. And vitamin C, and another example is that, the main function so far on topical vitamin C truly is to give the antioxidant defense. That happens on the surface of the skin as well. So it doesn't really need to get in as well. But if you're thinking about boosting collagen and elastin, for those kind of changes to happen on the much deeper, on the dermis level, you do need compounds to get in much deeper than simply sitting on top of your stratum corneum.
Definitely. My audience is kind of obsessed with longevity, and so am I. And I wanted to see if you have Any thoughts on what you're doing with your longevity regimen and kind of your supplement stack that you're taking?
Yeah, so I'm also a huge fan of longevity. One of my dear friends, he was the star postdoc at Dr. David Sinclair's lab. He was the one actually, worked on or invented the restoring hearing loss, not hearing, vision loss, from epigenetics and drugs in that realm. So I guess from a skin longevity perspective, there's nothing more important than sun protection. So, even if you're getting a lot of those treatments in office without proper sun protection, you're just wasting money, right? Like every sign of aging is going to come back. Your wrinkles, fine lines, facial volume loss, dark spots, texture, all of those things that you don't want or associate with aging are going to come back if you don't have proper sun protection. And I'm, a pretty lazy person in personal life, so I don't like to put 10 plus products on my face. For me, it's just Pavista and NH Defense. That's it. That's what I have on my face right now. I don't have anything else. I think another thing is reactive oxygen species is something very little talked about. That is the byproduct that every single hallmark of aging contributes, right? So, every day we wake up, we're just drowning in ROS that's gonna age us, right? It's either from UV radiation, especially from UVA rays, from smoking, from pollution, right? Like I think the fire in LA actually generated a lot of ROS that's very damaging to the skin. ROS is a culprit of all signs of aging, regardless of, if it's from a genomic instability or telomere shortening or cellular dysfunction. They all create ROS. So the Diamond Course, when we invented Diamond Core, that was truly just trying to see how we can eradicate the most ROS possible. That's why, we have Pavis that have to have a built-in sun protection just because, 80% of aging contributed to some sun exposure. Whereas the other 20%, again, that's from ROS. And from a supplement perspective, I have been experimenting NMN, so or NR. So I've been taking that, I would say, since 2019. I do like the science and clinical validation of that. I haven't tried rapamycin just because the side effects of the potential immunoregulation that for somebody who is so prone to get a cold and flu, I just haven't stepped into taking rapamycin.
Yeah, same here. I haven't thought of that yet either. I'm like, I'm gonna wait a while. I'll be generation two if this starts taking that. But I think the NAD precursors are really helpful, actually. And then, how about for your skin? Are there things you're doing for skin longevity? Of course, your skincare line. And then, do you do treatments like microneedling, collagen stimulating treatments? What are you doing? Let's.
Yeah, so
All right, we're gonna be nosy here.
yes, so I don't gatekeep. I do lasers. So I think, I have the benefit of li living in Boston. So actually, after this podcast, I'm going to Dr. Abrams' office to do a laser study of our new product. I probably have tried all of the lasers out there. I would say, erbium I have done that really helped me to really eliminate some of my acne scars from my teenage years. I do have a lot of acne scar, but now they are less visible. I attribute that to erbium. And I do like the traditional microneedling. I do think that will give that at least give me the boost and glow and then minimize appearance of pores, especially first month after treatment. And I have tried soft wave. That was so painful. And I'm not sure you have I guess, like in theory, the ultrasound technology works. I might be just too young on the spectrum to try that. I haven't really seen much of a lifting, maybe just because right now I don't need lifting. Any lifting thing I've done is not going to show up. But I have not tried any injectables in terms of fillers or Sculptra Radius of the world. I haven't tried that. But I think I'm 35. Down the road, I'm definitely open to try things, when I see a lot of scientific clinical evidence and also finding a very good doctor like you. So sad you're in California, so far from me.
You can come visit anytime. But for those of you who are not watching on video, she looks 25. So don't feel too bad for her. She looks flawless, actually. You don't need anything.
Thank you. This come from a lot of homework. This does not, I didn't wake up, no, I guess, and now I wake up like this, but I didn't grow up like this. I grew up, have so many acne and eczema and, dark spots. Like, I think all of the common concerns, skin concerns people have, I have had it. So, that's why I'm so obsessed with skin. And I'm definitely not perfect in terms of skin compared to those who actually was genetically blessed to have perfect skin, but I'm very proud of how far I have come from where I was, just, I guess, under 10 years ago.
Yeah, amazing. Well, as a female founder, kind of in the tech and beauty science space, what advice do you have for other women who are getting into science and beauty and launching a company?
I think, as a woman, we tend to be very self-critical of ourselves, right? I think, being very critical of our own appearance, which I believe every female has that, is a sign showing that, we may doubt our ability to do something, or just, simply by being there, being part of something. I still remember when I launched the company, I wanted to do this since I was 18. I was so bothered by my acne and eczema. But, that dream was delayed for over a decade because I thought I probably was not good enough, right? I thought, oh, other people must have done them. Other people must be better than me to do it. Or you have some idea some other people may already tried it that probably didn't work. I think it's after having a lot of self-doubt and also doing work and then realizing, oh, I was blessed to have the education and skills I have had, and I can actually go out there and make a difference. I think that confidence actually came from during COVID when I was in the beginning just getting a lot of my doctor friends, the N95s they needed during COVID for ICUs, for pulmonary ICUs. And then that somehow turned out to be a $10 million operation that we were the one, working with Massachusetts state government. We're working with all of the hospitals in Massachusetts to get them all of the life-saving PPEs. So that experience gave me a lot of confidence. Oh, wow, I can actually do something, make a huge difference for my community. Started from a simple idea that I just wanted to help my friends. So I think my advice is, I think the biggest obstacle for any female out there is just to go out there to do something. That's a first step, right? The first step to is to try it out. A lot of people are so fearful of failure, but at least from what I have experienced, that people will not remember your failure. I think everybody is so busy with their lives that they simply will not, be a helicopter mom watching you 24/7. Oftentimes, we really demonize failures, right? Because but failures is constant in life. That's what makes success so much celebrated and so rare out there. So failure is fine because that's just part of life. It's like you go into sleep, like you fail. It's pretty much the same thing. So not be fearful of failure, and you get back up. You get back up. Right. Not many people succeed from just their first shot. So I think, just not be fearful and not be so self-critical. Just go out there, do it, and you will find people actually out there supporting you, celebrating you, want you to succeed. And I'm just so grateful for a lot of people. When I first came to the aesthetics world, I didn't have any, I guess, connections in this industry. And I definitely certainly was scared. I was like, oh, is anybody gonna take me seriously? I think when I entered, I was 32 years old, 33. And I met with overwhelming support and people and doctors and doctors like you. They just wanting to help me and want and believe in we all together can do something greater and can invent something, can create something to help people, right? Because I think that's why Dr. K, you became doctor in the first place, because you wanted to help people. You want to help people to feel good, to enjoy their life, to make their lives better. And I'm just so thankful that, like I am part of this amazing community, and I just want it makes me more motivated to create things, to invent things, to develop things, to, make your job easier, to make your job better, and to make your patient happier.
Well, that's a really inspiring way to end the podcast, I think. I'm so impressed with everything you've done. You talk about failures, but so far you're a resounding success. So congratulations for everything you're doing and launching your skincare line, and also just bringing more female founders into this tech space. I'm excited to see you at the next meeting, the Tell All Tribune, where we're going to talk molecular, all kinds of molecular biology of skin and what's coming in aesthetics. So thank you so much, Sophie. Where can people find you and your amazing skincare line?
Yeah, so for me, my Instagram is SophieSophieBai, Sophie Bai is taken somehow. And so Pavise is our first skincare brand. It's Pavise. You can find us on pavise.com, or our Instagram is simply Pavise. We're also in about 800 practices right now. So you can also find us offline in our physician partners. And Bai Biosciences is BaiBiosciences.com, which is the holding company that I founded. It's a purely R&D platform to invent, synthesize new molecules ranging from eczema, skin cancer, skin aging, and so on.
I love it. Well, check it out, everybody. And don't forget to try the summer's here. We do need good skincare. We need our sunscreen for sure. That's it for now. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay, and doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same as beautybydrk.com. And I hope to see you guys on a future podcast. Every Tuesday, we do a longer one. On Fridays, there's a 5-Minute Friday. But that's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.